Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, everybody. Here is an episode from our 10-episode playlist that we're calling Offbeat History.
Yeah, we're adding this to our regular publishing schedule as one kind of big drop all at the same time on March 19th. And that is so that you maybe have a little bit of extra entertainment options available to you, particularly if you are self-quarantined or sheltering in place.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And who doesn't love a good hoax story? So there's actually a news series that we're going to talk about today, and we have to kind of air quote the word news. But it's an important landmark in journalism history as well as cultural history. It also involves the history of mass media and even sort of a lesson in gullibility and kind of crowd mentality. This is a topic that the Memory Palace actually did a short episode on back in 2010, and that episode is called The Moon in the Sun, and it's worth a listen. It is a brief but very enjoyable. So conspiracy theories and cartoons like Tex Avery's The Cat That Hated People aside— Do you remember that cartoon, Tracy?
I do not.
It was about a cat who hated people. He lived in New York City, and so he got himself on a rocket to the moon so he could be alone and enjoy it. But, of course, the moon was full of crazy things that made him just as annoyed as Earth and even more so. So much so that he figured out a way to get back to Earth, and even though New York did not treat him well, he was very happy. But we know that, in fact, that is fallacious information, and that the moon is basically pretty empty. There are some things there, but not crazy horn people as shown in that cartoon walking around. But in 1835, a New York newspaper printed a series of stories about amazing discoveries on the lunar landscape. And we are first going to talk at length about the incredible descriptions of the amazing things that were allegedly seen on the lunar surface through a telescope. One thing I noticed during my research about this news series is that the articles, and again, there are 6 of them and they're very lengthy, kind of get summarized to this point where it's like 2 to 5 sentences about each one, maybe, and some don't even cover that. And you lose a lot of the amazing and sometimes crazy descriptions of these discoveries. So Tracy and I are actually going to walk through the text with a lot more description. We're going to break down a lot more of it. And that makes this a 2-parter because there is a lot to talk about. Even though we're not covering everything in that quote historical account, because that would take hours. It's still going to take quite a bit of time. And so this first part, we're going to talk a lot about those entries in the New York Sun. The second part of this two-parter will wrap up the account as it was published in serial form. And then we'll talk about kind of the reception these claims got and sort of the atmosphere of the culture at the time and how that sort of enabled and provided a fertile ground for this hoax to happen.
So before the series began, the small teaser appeared in the New York Sun, and that was on Friday, August 21st, 1835. And this little teaser read, quote, "We have just learnt from an eminent publisher in this city that Sir John Herschel at the Cape of Good Hope has made some astronomical discoveries of the most wonderful description by means of an immense telescope of an entirely new principle." And the city that was being referenced in that sentence was Edinburgh.
Yeah, that was, it was placed, again, it was a tiny little teaser, and it was placed as though it was put there by the Edinburgh Current. Now, the first entry in this series appeared in the paper on Tuesday, August 25th, still 1835, so a few days later, so that little teaser had been allowed to sit for a bit, and it was titled, quote, "Great astronomical discoveries lately made by Sir John Herschel, LLD, FRS, at the Cape of Good Hope, from the supplement to the Edinburgh Journal of Science."
Sir John Herschel is not an entirely new name on the podcast. We mentioned him as the nephew of Caroline Herschel in our episode on astronomy's Cinderella.
Yeah, we'll reference Caroline very briefly towards the end of the second episode, but this article, this first entry, ran on the front page of the New York Sun, and it took up about 75% of the front page, and it opened with this. "In this unusual addition to our journal, we have the happiness of making known to the British public, and thence to the whole civilized world, recent discoveries in astronomy which will build an imperishable monument to the age in which we live, and confer upon the present generation of the human race a proud distinction through all future time." And again, they're placing this as though it had been, these were notes to the Edinburgh Journal of Science that were then being reprinted in New York.
It goes on to build up the announcement before making it. It describes the awe of such a discovery and how it makes us earthbound creatures feel almost like we suddenly have supernatural powers. Herschel is described as setting up his stupendous apparatus, which was his new telescope, which was, quote, "of vast dimensions and entirely new principle." And then he is described as pausing for several hours before looking through it so that he could collect himself and prepare for the discoveries that he was about to make.
Yeah. The article assured the reader at this point that Herschel was right to do so, because the things that he saw in his first hour of observation are incomparable in the way in which they're going to advance human knowledge. His telescope, the article said, rendered his view of objects on the lunar surface, quote, "fully equal to that which the naked eye commands of terrestrial objects at the distance of 100 yards.
An important thing to note at this point is that the article title makes it sort of sound like it was written by Sir John Herschel, but the actual entry is written as introduced from the point of view of the newspaper, reported to them through Dr. Andrew Grant. And that's who the New York Sun described as an assistant to the astronomer. The Sun assured readers that the notes that Grant had shared with the publication were almost as thorough as those of Herschel himself. After the intro, the articles then are framed as being written by Andrew Grant himself.
So the rest of the August 25th entry went on to describe in great detail Herschel's telescope. And the reason for this lengthy description, and I mean it is in great detail, according to this article, is that, quote, "a knowledge of the one is essential to the credibility of the other." So they're kind of setting it up that once readers understand how amazing this telescope is, then they won't for a second doubt its ability to see these things that no one else had previously seen.
It claimed that this apparatus was 24 feet in diameter, or 7.3 meters, and this would have made it 6 times the size of the telescope that his father William Herschel had built. To make some modern comparisons, the Hubble telescope is 14 feet, or 4.3 meters in diameter. the Gran Telescopio Canarias in the Canary Islands, which is currently the biggest optic telescope on Earth, is 34 feet or 10.4 meters in diameter. So it was basically claiming that this telescope was huge. Huge even comparison to other telescopes of today.
Oh, yeah. And at this point, remember, they're sort of building on this idea. You know, they're referencing William Herschel, who at that point was a very well-known astronomer. The discovery of Uranus had happened in the recent past. And so they're kind of building scientific credibility by referencing him and talking about how his son is advancing telescopic technology so much more. And apparently this new telescope that they were describing, which was reported as weighing nearly 7 tons, also possessed a hydro-oxygen microscope. So it combined telescopic technology with microscopic technology. And this projected the telescopic image onto a screen of canvas and allowed for clear magnification of far distant objects. How big and clear did this article claim it made things? It was reported that this telescope they're describing would have a magnification of 42,000 times.
So this was the first of the 6 entries in the series, and you will notice it has said almost nothing about the moon yet.
Yeah, this is all set up at this point. And before we get to the juicy stuff, do you want to pause for a word from a sponsor?
Let's do, because then we can have lots of juicy stuff close together. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All oldest girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by oldest girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to the New York Sun's account, as relayed to them by Dr. Andrew Grant, of the work of Sir John Herschel. The second entry that the newspaper published, which was the next day, is where things really get cooking. So in terms of descriptions, it really sort of blew things wide open. It first established the timeline of Herschel having left London on September 4th of 1834, transporting, when he did this, his assistants and his new lenses by ship to the Cape of Good Hope. And it also described the installation of the telescope in great detail, talking about like how it was laid out, how they built a foundation for it, etc., further establishing the credibility of the discoveries they were about to share.
The New York Sun reported that the fateful day on which Herschel turned his telescope to the moon was January 10th, 1835, at about 9:30 in the evening.
The lunar landscape, as seen through this telescope, was apparently, to Herschel, a greenish-brown basaltic rock. And he also saw that it was covered with dark red flowers, very similar to poppies. This, the article claimed, was, quote, the first organic production of nature in a foreign world ever revealed to the eyes of men.
He also recorded a lunar forest, which was said to resemble really large yew trees. And the astronomer observed that as the moon shifted positions, this was followed by a green plain and then a forest of fir trees. And after adjusting the telescope's magnification, Herschel and his assistant realized that they had also found a body of water with beautiful beaches that were full of white sand bordered by these green marble rocks. The water appeared to be blue, just like it does on Earth, and also seemed to experience tides.
Yeah, it talks at length about where they could see that the tides had hit the rocks on the edge of one side of this body of water. So according to the information that Dr. Grant shared with the New York Sun, the landscape observations that Dr. Herschel and his team were doing went on for almost 2 hours. And then after adjusting the lenses of the telescope once more, there are often references throughout all of these articles of how they adjusted lenses and switched things out. Then they observed various crystalline structures in the landscape, and then a herd of quadrupeds was spotted.
So this herd of creatures was reported to be in the shade of the forest, and the animals appeared to be a lot like small bison, although very much smaller than any bison on Earth. These creatures had a lot of characteristics that were similar to terrestrial bison. They were, quote, semicircular horns, the hump on its shoulders, and the depth of its dewlap, and the length of its shaggy hair. He also described this species as having, quote, a remarkable fleshy appendage over the eyes, which spanned across the head from ear to ear.
So according to this account, Herschel is said to have guessed that this flap covering the eyes would shield the animal from the extreme variations in light and darkness that the moon would experience.
Next in his moon's wildlife discoveries were creatures that the article suspects would be classified as monsters on Earth. These were small, goat-sized species that were the color of, quote, bluish lead. Males had single horns and beards, and female had neither horns nor beards, but did have longer tails than the males did. They frolicked around like antelopes, and they were very social creatures, and their antics, according to this report, were quite delightful.
Yeah, it goes on at length about how they were jumping around and playing with each other and how all of the astronomers observing this just were charmed to pieces.
They were charmed by the delightful monsters.
By the delightful goat unicorn creatures that were blue. There were also water birds espied through this telescope, including pelicans and cranes being the most common. These birds were discovered along a branching river, and the astronomers watched this river for some time, hoping to get their eyes on what they suspected might be lunar fish. But they were not rewarded. But they did deduce that the fish must have been there because the birds were seen dunking their heads in the water, seemingly as a food-gathering activity.
At this point in the observations, the lunar atmosphere, not Earth's atmosphere, became too cloudy for them to be able to see any further. And so the observers decided to take a break. They were also pretty tired by that point. So that ended the second installment of the New York Sun's series with kind of a cliffhanger.
Yeah, at this point, they've introduced crazy animal species that have been seen on the moon. But there is so much more to come. So on Thursday, August 27th of 1835, the third installment of the Moon Discovery series was published.
The cloudy conditions that had halted their viewings for a couple of nights cleared up on January 13th. And at that point, both the moon's atmosphere and the Earth's were clear, quote, one of pearly purity and loveliness. And as the position of the moon relative to the telescope's location was getting ready to shift, Dr. Grant wrote that Dr. Herschel wanted to focus the entirety of the evening on January 13th to just a few specific spots before that shift happened.
There is, at this point in the narrative, additional topographical descriptions of the moon's landscape. And these go on and on for quite some length to detail. There are mountains. There are mountains made of crystal. There are active and inactive volcanoes. There are incredibly fertile areas. At one point, this third installment describes it as, quote, fertile to excess in one passage. So it goes on a lot about the landscape.
Additional animals were identified as being different from the ones that had been sighted on earlier viewings, including larger versions of those bison creatures, as well as numerous flocks of red and white birds.
Herschel and his team, according to this article, classified 38 different species of lunar forest trees that night, and twice that number of plants in the relatively small area where they were concentrating their observations.
They also cataloged 9 mammal species and 5 oviparous species. The mammals included beasts that look like little reindeer, as well as elk and moose and horned bears, and one that looked like a biped beaver, although apparently the moon beavers had no tails.
So the moon beaver gets talked about a lot. It was very exciting, and it also, again, being biped, carried its young cradled in its arms the same way that a human would as it was tootling around on its hind legs. And these lunar beavers also constructed huts rather than dams, so they're a little more archaeological or architecturally advanced. And this construction was described as, quote, better and higher than those of many tribes of human savages, and from the appearance of smoke in nearly all of them, there is no doubt of its being acquainted with the use of fire.
So if you do have the opportunity, which I encourage you to take, to listen to the Memory Palace episode about this, one of my favorite parts is about these beavers.
When you're reading the articles, the beaver part is just hilarious to me.
Yes.
Because there's such excitement over these biped beavers that know how to use fire.
So south of where these beaver-type animals were seen was a dense forest where the only animal seen was this large stork-like bird. Not far from the thickly wooded area was the largest lake that was visible, which was estimated to be 198 by 266 miles, or 319 by 428 kilometers. The lake reportedly contained volcanic islands.
And before we talk about a little bit of amazing flora seen on some of these islands in this lake, do you want to have a word from a sponsor?
Sure. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to these amazing volcanic islands discovered on the moon. One of the really fabulous and exciting discoveries there was that there were moon palm trees. These were visually almost identical to Earth palm trees, except that they blossomed with bright red flowers and they did not appear to bear fruits like date or coconuts.
However, in terms of fruit-bearing trees, there was a melon tree, and there were herds of miniature zebras and birds that the team thought were pheasants. The shores of this massive body of water were also filled with shellfish.
And as this third entry in the series winds down, there is an attempt to describe the crystal-lined vista that's surrounding these waters, although the curvature of the moon and the Earth's rotation allows for no visibility that they can identify the end of this particular segment of landscape.
So you may be thinking that the wonders described up until this point were really pretty amazing, but the fourth installment that was printed in the New York Sun is even more incredible. This one appeared on Friday, August 28th, 1835, and a lot of people regard it as the most sensational of the six parts of this serial.
So again, it starts, as previous entries, with a lengthy description of the latest landscape that they're observing, which featured bright red perpendicular mountains and long veins of what the team concluded were virgin gold. They also describe another quadruped species, and these ones were observed to be white, sheep-like beasts, but with long necks. And the body is described almost deer-like in shape, but with longer front legs. So as I was trying to visualize this, I was like, it's a sheep-deer-giraffe? But then another group of animals is described that apparently looked exactly like sheep. Exactly like sheep. No visible variation at all. And they were so obviously sheep, according to Dr. Grant's account, that it made all of the astronomers laugh.
And then Dr. Grant's account drops the real bomb. A wholly new creature appeared in the telescope's view, and several groups of winged creatures descended from a cliff face to land on an open plain. Sir John Herschel is quoted in the article as saying, quote, "Now, gentlemen, my theories against your proofs, which you have often found a pretty even bet, we have here something worth looking at. I was confident that if we ever found beings in human shape, it would be in this longitude, and that they would be provided by their creator with some extraordinary powers of locomotion. First exchange for my number D."
And so when he asked for that exchange for number D, that refers to a lens that Herschel wanted to use to more carefully examine the scene before him. So adjustments were quickly made to the telescope, and everything was refocused, and the team then viewed three groups of these beings walking erect, and these new creatures were indeed similar to humans.
After more focusing and more adjustments, these creatures were brought into clear focus, and they appeared to be about 4 feet or 1.2 meters tall. They had copper-colored fur all over their bodies except for on their faces, and their wings were like bat wings. Their faces were described as, quote, "a slight improvement upon that of the large orangutan." It's actually spelled in this as orangutang, which delights me. And they're described as seeming more intelligent than the earth primate, the orangutan.
Yeah. These bat people also had beards and darker hair on their heads than on the rest of their bodies. One of Herschel's assistants is quoted in Grant's account as saying, quote, "they would look as well on a parade ground as some of the old Cockney militia."
Herschel and his team observed these beings in what appeared to be impassioned conversation, gesturing to one another just like human beings would.
This species was named by Herschel as Vespertilio Homo, man bat, and the valley where they lived was named the Ruby Colosseum.
The New York Sun omitted some of the passages from the notes at the behest of Dr. Grant, who apparently felt like those elements were best shared by Sir Herschel himself. The Sun indicated that the omitted material does, quote, "contain facts which would be wholly incredible to readers who do not carefully examine the principles and capacity of the instrument with which these marvelous discoveries have been made."
The newspaper also indicates that sort of their editorial opinion that when the entirety of this work is published by Herschel, it is going to be, quote, "at once the most sublime in science and the most intense in general interest that ever issued from the press."
And that is where we now will cliffhang you. The second episode of this two-parter is going to finish off Dr. Grant's accounts of what Herschel observed on the moon, and then we'll talk about how all of this was received by the public and by other newspapers, and even by Sir John Herschel himself.
Yeah, so there's plenty more, although we've given you probably the juiciest of the actual fauna discoveries.
Thank you so much for joining us today for this classic. If you have heard any kind of email address or maybe a Facebook URL during the course of the episode, that might be obsolete. It might be doubly obsolete because we have changed our email address again. You can now reach us at historypodcast@iheartradio.com, and we're all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.